like my father was saying, that during the night often that government changed. So in the morning when you got up, you never know what you have to say, comrade or mister. You know, so that quickly was changing. Mm-hmm. And so in 1918, Latvia got the freedom. Mm-hmm. And so after they got freedom, they had, you know, those organization for, you know, to help Latvian to come home. And that's how we went to Latvia in 1921. So of course, you know, like, I mean, that was such a happy time, you know, when people were coming home. Of course, we didn't have a home and anything in Latvia at that time. We stayed for a while with my father's relatives, and then he had a job. Then he took my mother and us. I had a brother to his mother, to my grandmother, you know, in Kuldīga. So we were there for a while till he got a job, and so we lived in a capital city, Riga, all our life there. Because we came, you know, like from Russia, that we spoke Russian, you know, like, and so when we started school, it was so, my mother was, you know, kind of middle class. Mm-hmm. So at that time, of course, when she went to school, you know, people went to a private school, you know, because, so she couldn't even think that we would be going to a public school. So she found a school. There were two sisters who had a smaller school, you know, and of course they were willing to talk to us Russian, something, you know, just to please to get those two kids. And so we started that school. And then it turned out that one of those teachers, her child had a scarlet fever. And you know, it was, you know, when you have scarlet fever, you have to notify, you know. Mm-hmm. So she went to my mother and said not to tell that she had that scarlet fever her child has. So that way, you know, she couldn't work. My mother got so angry about it, you know. She took us out of that school. So she took us out of the school. So anyway, we ended in public school. We had a hard time first year with the language, you know, because that's, but we were both, my brother was through all the education, he was always first, you know. It ended so that I finished at high school and I didn't have the English. So when I came to Canada, that is my was hard things that I didn't have English, otherwise I would have at least some of them. Latvia built sugar factories that time. We had altogether, we built three sugar factories, and then so many young men could get a job there. Because, you know, I don't know if you know, but sugar beets takes up a lot of work. So that means it needs many people, you know, to do that. They employed usually young students mostly. And my son was born in 39, and then it's, you know, started. And you see that Russian, that like communists, you know, what they did in 1940, they just invaded Baltic states, just came in and took it over. And of course they said that we had invited them, naturally. So you see, they took all the Baltic states, they took it over. And that's our freedom ended in 1940. And so we had 1 year, we had those communists for 1 year. You can imagine those communists, that country was so poor, you know, like Russia. So those people, they right after communists came over, they even took children away from their parents and were growing in a institution So when by the time when you met them and they had grown up, they didn't even know their parents. They didn't know anything, and they still was, you know, it was really, really very poor. We had everything. By that time, Nazis came with power, and Nazis were very strong. So in 1941, exactly a year later, they invaded Baltic states. Russians, because Germans were so strong that they just walked in, you know. They walked in and they kicked Russians out. I had seen with my own eyes that those Russians were running. They were running and Germans were after them in 1941. Very hard life that winter because it was cold winter and Germans were not even dressed properly for cold like that. Well, you know, like my father said, there is the same thing. It's only thing Germans work with the gloves on and Russians wear go without gloves. But somehow, personally, we didn't feel so bad like it was when those Russians were there. Of course, you know how young people are always hot-headed, you know, and try to do. So they were killed. They were killed right around, you know. We had that year in 1940. That was a terrible year, they called. And in that book, you know, they showed people how they looked when they in their life and how it looked when they dug them from the graves, how they had tortured them. I was, at that time, I was glad that my son was so young. He couldn't understand what's going on because you were walking on the street, you know, like, you know, on the sidewalk. And they was hoarding, those Germans were hoarding Russians, you know, and they were all, you know, poor and they're hungry and they were going and asking for bread, you know, just asking. And they were shooting him right on the street. And, you know, so like I said, I was glad that my son was young enough to notice those things, to understand. You see, at that time when Germans came, then they were after Jews. You know, they were arresting Jews. They put those yellow star on. Then when they was at the ghetto, they took their stuff. You know, and so many Jews was in good positions. So they had nice homes like that. So they just took all that, whatever they can take it. So that was very, very hard because, you know, some of them you even knew personally. And even if you didn't know, you know, you walk on a sidewalk, for example, and a Jew is walks. So he has to, doesn't matter, you are just ordinary person. He had to get place for you and he has to go down in a gutter. So, you know, it's very uncomfortable, you know, when you see something like that, even if they don't do anything to you personally. Mm-hmm. That was really hard time. So we had those Germans from till 1944. And in 1944, Russians got stronger. When they got stronger, they got Estonia, but it's north from us. They got their capital city. They took that in. So when they took in that one, then my husband thought we have to leave home because if they took that one, they were coming down. So we have to leave home. So we had lived in Riga. We had to leave everything, like, you know, like now here, you just go. And so we went, and my husband had a sister by the sea, you know, by the west, you know, said that that's at Liepāja, that city, that's a harbor city. And they had, they were fishermen, you know, south from that. we were out in that country with my with his sister living there. Then my husband decided we have to escape to Sweden. At that time, you see, at first you had to be German to go to Germany. But at the end of that war, you know, like at that time, it was so that if we wanted to go to Germany, we could go to Germany. But I said, no going to Germany, you know, it would be even worse. So then my husband started to look for a boat, you know, like we needed a boat to go across Baltic Sea. 5th of October, he got a boat. And it was very strong, you know, air raid. They got that boat and they came south 22 kilometers where we were. And now we started to put stuff in a boat and we are going. And what happened? While there, that air raid was, one of the pieces of that bomb fell in that boat and got stuck in a bottom. When they started to put stuff in, that thing fell out and water started to come in the boat. So we couldn't go. So we went out and stayed for 3 days in a cellar. And in a sea, there was a German ship. And behind us in a bush, there were Russians. And we were in the middle there. We had hardly anything to eat because be afraid to make, you know, to have a fire, so, you know, so they will see that there are people. So anyway, that didn't go anywhere. So we were there 3 days and then it got kind of quieter. Then my husband decided we have to walk now to Liepāja. Liepāja, that harbor city where we could leave. So he hitched one horse and got some stuff that we had, you know, they couldn't choose with anything. And then we walked those 22 kilometers. My parents was with us, and my mother was not strong enough to walk all those. So my mother and those little kids, then by that time I had two little girls too. So they sat in that buggy and we walked those 22 kilometers to the Liepāja. We got there, and there were empty houses. You know, people had gone to Germany and just left a house just like that, just gone. So we found that one house, and then we were there, and then some other family who we didn't know. And my youngest girl that time, she was 11 months old, and she had a nipple, you know, in a bottle. Of course, she had a teeth by then, and she bit that needle, that nipple. So that means that she didn't have anything to, even if water you would give them. So of course, she was crying. And in the next room, there are strange people, you know, we were out on the floor, of course. And my husband said, well, do something. So what do you do? It was really awful. So we stayed in that room that winter till November. You just stayed in that room. You know, my son, who was oldest, he had a coat on. The children were dressed to go to the shelter any minute. So, and I was there by myself because my husband was on a boat with some belongings that we had. So I was all by myself all day with the children and nothing to eat, you know, like because my father too was working in a sugar factory, we had a bag of sugar. And for some reason, rye bread in the stores were quite, you know, at least we thought it was good bread that time. And so we had that bread and sugar. So in the evening, my husband would come and then he would sleep here. And it was really terrible. And then, you know, one night like that, we were sitting there like that. And my youngest daughter was 10 months old. And she was skinny little thing, you know. And when she wore booties, but my son, her, when he was little, they wouldn't stay on her feet, they would fall off. That's skinny she was. And so that one evening when I was really low, and I said, wouldn't be so bad if I wouldn't have an illness. Like I didn't, when I said that, I didn't think that I would, that she would die, you know, something like that. But I thought if I never would had her, you know, I would have her easy with those two. So my husband felt, of course, bad about that. And then what happened? That she had diarrhea. You know, nothing to eat, nothing, you know, like it. And her diarrhea, I felt so sad, she had even blood in there. Mm-hmm. Now I really got scared. Because now, like I said, I would be better without her. Now I felt, you know, really bad. So we had to leave those whole two kids by themselves in that empty house and go and look for a doctor. So we found a doctor and he gave prescription and said, because she's so small, you have to follow that prescription, you can't change. And that city was empty, that, you know, there was nothing. So my husband took me home and went to look for that medicine. And he was lucky, at last he found, because that time there were no drugs, you know, it's not like a normal thing, there is a store, you go to the store, there is no stores, nothing. And he found that medication. And so, I mean, she is still living and very stubborn and very strong. But so that was, a horrible time, you know. Like, you know, when the people complained here about that they had a hard time, depression when they were small kids. When you are a kid, you don't even feel it like that. When you are a parent and have to think about that kid. And they think that they are bad. Mm-hmm. Then we got lice. We slept on the floor, you know, the mattresses. So we were there like that, and then in November, he met some people to go to Sweden. Mm-hmm. And there's a whole bunch, I think there were 60 people for that boat. And of course, some people, they can't part with anything. You know, they have to have everything. They would take sacks of potatoes and, you know, just ridiculous. So anyway, we got caught by Germans. And so we got on that boat and the man was up and put those pipes, you know, down where they usually put fish, you know. So we were sitting there with children. And now I hear, you know, military boats. And you hear that, and then my husband had loud voice, you know, anyway. And I hear him saying, they are all communists, they are all communists. We are poor fishermen, we have no place to live. We are just living on that boat, and we are not planning to go anywhere. And they believed him. Oh, you know, my husband could persuade people you wouldn't believe well. And so anyway, they left us. But now we couldn't go. We have to leave that boat. So most of the people left the boat. And we stayed on a boat in November, 3 days. It was cold, like awful. After 3 days, they were air raid again coming. But now at least I had my husband. So at least he could carry one girl and I with the other one. Before, I had to carry one and drag another, the oldest one. So anyway, we dwelt in a shelter. So we were there. Now that ended, I said to my husband, you can do what you want to do. I'm not going back on that boat. And I'm not going to an empty house either. Do what you want to do. So he has to figure out what to do because I was determined. I'm not going anymore. So then my husband started planning again to go. That was the third time. So he met one captain. Captain was a Latvian man, but the rest of them were German soldiers. So what they did, they took one part from a motor, you know, they said, well, it didn't work. And so to get those Germans off the boat, so, you know, so that the boat didn't work like that. So anyway, so, and then we have only 26, between those 26, there were five children. So it's just a small group. And it was so that we couldn't tell anybody, even your best friend, you know, that you were going there. And my youngest one, you see, she was 10 months old or 11 months old, you know, something like that. They insisted that I should give her a sleeping pill, you know, that she wouldn't cry. She was so skinny, so little, I was even afraid to give her something like, so I didn't give her. I said I did, but I didn't give it. And I was glad I didn't, because when we went to the boat, she fell asleep already being in fresh air. And it took us 17 hours to go to Sweden, and she never woke up. But because I didn't give her, can you imagine how it would have felt if I would have given the sleeping pill, and here she sleeps like dead. Yeah. So she slept 17 hours. And so we reached Sweden, you know, on a Gotland Island. You see, our son was 5 years old, you know, 5 and a half. We told him, so we are going to Germany, because if we would be caught and they would ask him, you know, then he would say we go to Germany. We couldn't mention Sweden. And so we told him that about that Germany. So when we came to that island, that guard, you know, coast guards, they was watching for us, you know, and they took us off our boat and took us to a lighthouse, you know. And so my son, when he got up, he kind of stood and he looked around and he said, oh, that's how Germany looks. And you know, right now I'll tell you, and I don't cry, but for years I cried just saying that, no, Andy, that's not Germany. We are in Sweden and everything will be all right. And every time I would say it, I cried for years. And so we went to that lighthouse. That lady was making coffee, and I mean coffee, but we never had for a long time. We almost fainted just for for that aroma. And she baked some biscuits, I suppose, but was so white that you almost couldn't look at them. So they took us in and they put us, they couldn't put us at a refugee camp because they were children and they had, they'd been sick, and so they didn't want our children. So they put us in a Salvation Army, had a little church. So we slept in that church on the floor on both sides of that. And then, you know, at that time, then we could, you know, really started to live. And food we got from army kitchen. And my gosh, we haven't had such a food for years. You can't imagine, people was eating almost ashamed, you know, that. And so we were there a week. And ladies, you know how ladies organizations, you know, they come and see refugees. They would come and bring us coffee and pastries. But we couldn't really talk much because very few who could speak German. So we sang Latvian folk songs. We can sing Latvian folk songs by hundreds. And so they couldn't believe that we could sing without books and anything. And in mainland, then we had a big Estonian camp. There were more Estonians than Latvians. So at that time, you know, like that life was, you know, you didn't have to be scared from anything, you know, everything was just peaceful, you know, and like that, except my son got chickenpox really bad. And so then my husband and another two friends who were younger, they went to work in a peat moss cutting briquettes. Because my husband liked to want to work. He couldn't just stay there and all the job he had to bring 3 meals a day. So he went there and then they put me in another camp, a smaller one, so it would be closer, so the men could visit, you know, once a month or something. And then there is like a fairy tale. They were coming, you know, in train, you know, they were speaking Latvian. There was one man, a gentleman. He asked them, you know, what language they are talking, you know, and where they are, you know, so and so. And he asked my husband, you know, them, what they were doing when they were at home. And my husband said that he was working in the sugar industry. By that time, we had 3 sugar factories. It turned out when Latvia built their sugar factory, they had no idea, you know, how to operate. So they got in partnership with Sweden. The Swedish people came over and were teaching them. So that man was second in command from that all Swedish sugar factory. So he said, he said to my husband, "Well, I guess, you know, you are sugar master, we have to look after you." And he gave him his business card, gave him that card and said, "When you are finished, you know, in that work, just come and see me." So when he finished working, he put his only suit and he went to Malmö. So my husband had a job in the office between those cities. So he took a bike. On a bike he went. So we lived very properly. That life was wonderful, you know, if you go to what we went there. So we just lived just really, really nice. You see, they took all that, but those people made a mistake. They came in German uniform. They didn't take their uniforms off. They came to Sweden thinking that Sweden is such a wonderful country. And they didn't take their uniform off. They came in uniform. That was their mistake. Oh, we were fighting with, you know, we were trying, you know, like those Latvian refugees, like we were trying all kind of, you know, to, some people, like I, for example, I got a letter from somebody, but I didn't even know, you know, and he wrote to me like I would be his sister. Because you see, they are always hoping if they have some relatives that maybe they will let them stay, you know. But nothing helped. Nothing helped. One man committed suicide right there, you know, and so it was terrible time. Those Latvians who came in that universe, they arrested them and they sent them back. We tried to save them somehow, you know. But we couldn't. They sent them back, and then after that, you know, when you said, they shot all of them. As soon as they got across, they shot them. You see, that was, there was many people, men, in Canada and in States. They were in Latvian Legion, and those who were in Latvian Legion, they couldn't return to Latvia. So you see, so many of them were divorced. Their wives were there in Latvia. You know how those men were in the army, you know, and those wives were there, and we had some friends like in here, you know, when we were here, who's he had two children there, and he had divorced his wife, but all those years he worked here, he sent money to his children. Of course, they were all grown up. And then when I went to Latvia first time, then I visited them there. But that's how it happened. They couldn't return. There was one fellow who went to school with my brother, and he never divorced his wife, you know. But she was, and his son were in Latvia, and he was here. And he always sent, you know, he always sent money to them, and got, actually he even died in Latvia when he went back there. My husband was said, he thought that in Europe it wouldn't be so safe, you know, he wanted to go away from Europe. And he had a friend when he was in high school, then his friend, when they finished high school, they were first planning both to go to Canada. Then my husband didn't go, but his friend went. And so he was a farmer in Alberta. And so then my husband wrote to him, and they gave us support, sponsorship. And you know, that time, they gave the sponsorship so easy that his friend was a farmer, a really poor farmer. He was very poor land and so on, you know. And five children, and they still gave them, you know, sponsorship for us to come. And so that's how he came to Canada. But my hardest time in life was Canada. Canada was awful hard. Awful bad. And then we came to Red Deer, and of course we never, like right now, when those immigrants, when they get those help with that, my husband was very proud of that, that nobody ever helped him, nobody ever gave him anything, everything what he has, he did it himself. And our youngest daughter, you know, she was born in Canada. So, and it was always that deal that they will go to university. And so all the four children had university education visa. That train stopped in Brooks and wouldn't go. For 15 hours we stayed there. And of course we didn't even know what was going on. And so we came to Calgary in middle of the night, and then we had to go, you see, we had to go to Red Deer, and then we had to go to West, you know, to that friend. When we came to Red Deer, and we were not dressed for that kind of winter because we were in southern part of Sweden, and so it was cold. We, like I said, we were not even dressed like that. And so when my husband's friend, he went to investigate where that road will be cleaned west from Red Deer west, and it was Saturday noon, and they said it will be on Monday. And where will we go? We, you know, of course we didn't have the money to go to the hotel or anything like that. And so his friends, he didn't even have a car. We had an army jeep, but it was his wife's uncle. So they took us back to Olds, north of Olds, they had a farm there. And of course, those people were completely stranger to us. We never knew who they were. But there was his wife's uncle, an aunt. And that lady was the friendliest person I ever met in Canada. But, you know, she never knew. We were complete strangers, you know, with three children, like that. But she took us like we would be their best friend, if she would be waiting for us, you know. You can't imagine how friendly that lady was. I always said, of course, we were friends till she died. She was just wonderful. Canada, we had to go to New York. So we went to New York and we stayed that one day because that train to Montreal was going in the evening. So we had that, we came in Montreal like late in the evening, and we stayed all day in Montreal waiting for a train west. I'll tell you, when we stopped in Red Deer in front of Eaton's, you know that, and then of course went to eat store to get warmed up, that clothes, but you know, the women was the same white and you know all that, but they were not as smart looking as in Europe. For example, one thing I couldn't understand, that a lady, you know, like well dressed, she will have a black coat, you know, and then she wears a red hat. Like in Europe, you know, if you had a black coat, you wear a black hat, you know. So I found that they didn't have the style. And he would bring, I was reading Time magazine, but I couldn't even say anything. So anyway, he came always, you know, visit us, you know, and that was really big help. He got us the radio, you know, but we didn't have. So it was really, really nice. And that, you know who was my teacher in English? You will never guess. Ma Perkins. You know, they have those soap operas. You know, well, they have on TV now too. Yeah, but at that time, they had on the radio too, those soap operas. And people, you know, if you know that language, then it gets kind of annoying when they repeat the same thing over again. You know how that soap opera, that's that. But for me, it was so, I would put my baby after lunch to sleep. Then I come down to the kitchen and stand by that radio and listen. And if I couldn't catch Baran, tomorrow she'll be repeating something. That's how I learned. And you know what? That was very good, because that Ma Perkins was an ordinary woman, because often in those soap operas, those ladies are dressed up, you know, kind of dressy, but she was just a plain ordinary Ma Perkins. And one time I went, you know, to see her, and she was making tea. And I said to her that watched kettle never boils. And she was so, because my English was not like now, you know, she was so surprised. How do you know that? From Ma Perkins. You see, she would say ordinary things just for you to repeat. So that was perfect. Well, first time I went, a year after Latvia was free, it was almost horrible. There was so dirty, that city was so dirty you couldn't imagine. Practically stunk, you know. But when I told one Russian woman, she said, you think it's dirty here, you should see in Russia, there is much dirtier. You know, you go on Main Street, you know, Main Street, and there is garbage on collected on both sides of that street. You know how it would collect by the building? That's how it was. And you couldn't buy anything. There was nothing. And like people, if they had a bread, they would hold bread in hand, no paper, nothing. There was really, really terrible that time. And there was one woman whose grandfather is here in Canada, you know, I knew her. And she was a teacher. She wanted to go with us. So now at noon, I want to have lunch. It says coffee place. You open the door, it's empty, all empty. There is nothing. Absolutely no place where you can go, you know, and eat. But at that time, they still had some expensive restaurant. You know, it was Germans who did, you know. But of course, local people don't even dare to go there. They wouldn't let them in. But I said, we are going there. You know, I mean, we are, after all, tourists. We went there, and that girl, I mean, after all, she's a teacher. It's not like intelligent woman. She was almost scared, you know, to go there. So we went in there. And there was white tablecloths on a table and so on. And she didn't know what to order. Like, we ordered some pork chops, so they ordered the same thing. But she was almost scared there. She didn't know, So anyway, at that time it was so that you just couldn't get anything. You see, my youngest daughter, who was born in Canada, of course, she always wanted to see when Dad was, you know, born. Mm-hmm. She was, and I knew that she really wanted to go to Latvia. So that one time I thought, I just have to go with her, because how long I will be able, you know, to go. So when I went to her and I said to her that we will go to Latvia, so we went with her. By that time, it started to get better. You go to the store and you get some stuff what you buy in Canada. Of course, it was expensive, but you can get. But at first time, there was just nothing, just completely nothing.